Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. At 5:20, Nick Friedell, who covers college and the NBA, will talk to us about the NBA. We'll keep it real short on the Pelicans because last night was really, really, really bad. That was an embarrassing loss to Portland. Charlie, some things are kind of happening in the NFL world that you can see the moving pieces starting to slow down a little bit. The Saints did officially announce that they had their virtual interview today with Mike Kafka, former Northwestern quarterback who has coached as the passing game coordinator with the Kansas City Chiefs last year, offensive coordinator and quarterback coach with the New York Giants. Aaron Glenn turned down an opportunity to interview with the New England Patriots. I think Aaron Glenn feels like, I think most of us do, that job's Mike Rabel's job. And why should I waste my time with it? And it is, he has a scheduled interview right with the Saints tomorrow. It's coming down to, he's going to have his choice. You want the Saints job or the Jets job?
Right. So ESPN's Adam Schefter has his full kind of interview schedule for the end of this week. Tonight, he interviews with the Jets, kind of like you mentioned. Tomorrow morning, he interviews with the Saints. Tomorrow night with the Raiders. Saturday morning with the Jaguars. And Saturday night with the Bears. So he's got five interviews scheduled in the next basically 2.5 days. So Aaron Glenn's going to be highly coveted.
And I think it's going to come down to
those
Saints,
two.
Jets. My thing is, I want to know who's doing the interviewing with the Jets. Is it Woody Johnson? Because he's fired the GM.
They don't have a GM right now, so I imagine so.
And, again, people say, well, the Jets have the big advantage. My thing is, if you're doing sports talk radio in New York, and I've had the opportunity to do it three times over the last 2 weeks, man, you should hear that. You think it's bad here about the Saints? It ain't nothing compared to the Jets. They do not have a young quarterback. They're going to have salary cap issues, not in the realm of the Saints, but they got salary cap issues. You got Woody Johnson, who's been a very impetuous owner
right
all across the board. He's meddled in everything. You know, at one time he was pals with Aaron Rodgers, and then when that didn't work out, then, you know, you can see the divide there with it. Man, that's a lot of bad teams in the NFL. Bobby and I've talked about that. You know, there's a lot of teams that are really struggling in this league, and the Jets are one of them.
So the one thing that is kind of intriguing about the Jets, Mike, I don't know if you saw this, they had their GM interview with Mike Bergonzi recently, the assistant GM of Kansas City, who I think is super under the radar for some of these GM openings, but the Jets obviously have them on his, or had him on their radar.
I don't take that job with the Jets.
Probably not. I think you're feeling pretty push or posh and comfy where you are in Kansas City, but if you want to be a full-time lead guy.
If you could give me the job in Jacksonville and Balke's out of there, that's where I want
to
go.
That would be ideal, but I don't think Shad Khan's going to get rid of Trent Baalke, which is crazy to think about.
Man, I don't know about that. I think Mr. Khan, he's on the kind of teeter-totter about it because a lot of people thought Tom Telesco, the GM of the Raiders, was safe. Okay, 48 hours after they cut loose Antonio Pierce, Telesco got it. And so that tells me it's fingerprints, thumbprints, toe prints, any other body part. Tom Brady is really having a huge say on what's happening with that Las Vegas franchise.
I mean, Mike, do you think that the Jags are going to pull the plug with Trent Baalke? I think it would be the smart thing to do, but I just don't know if it's going to happen or not.
There's no question that I think there are people that are in his ear about, hey, listen, the problem is Trent Baalke.
That's a huge domino to fall, Mike, because then they instantly become more, you know,
they're very palatable to a coach.
To like a Ben Johnson, right? We talked about that yesterday as well. So, but my whole point in this is right now the Jets, yes, they're interviewing a bunch of different people. They still have to find their GM. I really do think Bergonzi would be a slam dunk for them. But, you know.
Man, I'm going to be choosy if I'm him.
Yeah, I would be
I'll
as
be
well.
I'll be very choosy.
I would be as well. But the head coaching job in New York for the Jets is just so up in the air. We have no idea who's going to have that job. But Aaron Glenn, as we mentioned, is interviewing with them tonight. And just as much as he makes sense for the Saints, he also makes sense for, you know, the Jets.
He makes it because tell you one thing. I got a tailor-made defense that's pretty damn good in New York.
They got some pieces.
And they got some young pieces.
Yes, I agree.
With the Jets. That's the advantage there. And they don't have, they have some salary cap issues, but not in the realm of the Saints. But, okay, you don't have a young quarterback. Your offensive line is middle of the road at best. At best.
Yeah.
You do have Garrett Wilson, and you do have Breece Hall. So you got a couple pieces there.
And you have the seventh overall pick this year.
You got the seventh pick. You got a young offensive lineman that really played well this year for him at the left tackle position. But, man, ownership matters in this league. Man, I've had a lot of coaches tell me, man, it's about who's the boss. Are they going to be involved in these everyday operations? I don't want somebody that doesn't know football constantly being involved in football-related decisions. They can know about it, but not to call, pull the strings.
Mike,
Woody Johnson has done that with the Jets.
I was about to say, if David Tepper doesn't exist, Woody Johnson's probably the worst owner in the NFL. You remember that report where he nixed a trade because of a Madden rating?
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? What is that about? So, yes, there's questions with ownership for sure, but Woody Johnson's in all likelihood the one that's doing all these interviews for these head coaching candidates and GM candidates. So if Aaron Glenn's comfortable...
Oh, he's got a gopher that does it for him, so to speak. You ask him these questions.
That's true.
Because, come on, Woody's a billionaire. I mean, you know, I don't want to do no virtual...
That's small fry stuff.
I got other things to do in life. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We'll have on with us Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedel right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillia along with Charlie Long in studio. We go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, and on our line is Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedel. Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai at Amazon.com. How about that? Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. Before we talk some NBA, I'm going to ask you, what you think about the game tonight, Notre Dame and Penn State?
There you go.
Hey, you got an opinion on that? Come on.
Mike, I still refuse to believe that James Franklin, who could never win a big game prior to 2 weeks ago, is going to roll through two more of these games, and Penn State's going to do it. So give me the Irish tonight. I will be shocked if Penn State can actually pull it off. But, you know, James Franklin and his team have the chance to make people like me shut up if they can keep winning. So it'll be fun to see how this shakes out.
Nick, every week we do a television show with Rich Marty, former Penn State player. Man, if I'd have put Rich's voice on what you said, you'll say the exact same damn thing. The exact same thing. He said, Mike, I got to see it to believe it. He was so thrilled that, you know, Penn State has gotten this far that, you know, he got him a flight. He's out in Miami now to watch the game at the Orange Bowl. But that is really something. How about that? That thing with Franklin is going to stay with him. Because if he gets bounced tonight, again, that's going to be hanging over that Penn State program again for 2025. The exact same comments. Oh, yeah, he won a couple games, but he can't win the big game.
Big game James.
He ain't big game James.
Completely, because people are going to say, oh, you beat SMU at home and you beat Georgia, who was missing their starting quarterback. I mean, come on. So the only way, and there is an NBA parallel, I mean, the only way you shake reputation in the NBA is to win. It's
yeah,
the same thing.
Exactly.
I mean, James Franklin, if he wants to shake that, he's got to win these next two. And if he does, then they're gone. But until he does, and that team at Penn State does, then all will be the same.
Nick, you know, we've talked about this before with all the injuries with the Pelicans is one thing, and that certainly has a factor. But this team plays such lousy defense. I mean, you can't give up 75 points and a half. That's not all about injuries. Willie Green came in here with that reputation that he was going to build this team around playing really good defense. I ain't seen it this year.
That's his calling card.
It's not there. So my thing about it is I get it. Okay, and injuries do happen. Nothing you can do about it at this stage in the game. But the lack of defense on this Pelicans team is stunning to me.
Nick, it was
just absolutely stunning.
It was on full display last night against a bad Portland team, a team that was 12-23 entering that matchup. They go 16-22 in the first quarter, score 40 points. That's the most points they've scored in the first quarter all season long. For the first half, they go 31-46. They score 75 points in the first half.
And they did it to Portland.
Blow past their season high in a first half, which I think was before that was 69. 75-42 first half hole last night in the Smoothie King Center. I get it's a back-to-back, right? But, like, no, we have texts about it on our line saying Willie Green's calling card is defense. Where's the defense? What's happening here? They got blown out of the water instantly by a bad Portland team, and it just started from the get-go.
Guys, I have a headache for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Nick. Thank you, brother.
I mean, those numbers, hearing that again, that is painful. I mean, it truly, like, when those numbers start to pop up and every coach comes into the press conference and comes into that first year with a reputation, and Willie certainly, those first years, is getting those guys to play hard. It's just not happening now. It's not the same. And, Mike, I remember you asked me a few weeks ago, you know, is this probably it over the next couple months? I would still lean towards, yes, when you're starting to see these scores and this stuff pop out, it's only a matter of time. Guys, where I would take it on a broader point to the league, though, is there was so much hype around that OKC-Cleveland game last night.
That was people a damn are coming good out. Game. Really was.
Exactly. It really was. And the problem is, the other five or six games, as you guys are well aware in New Orleans, they weren't good at all. No. So on top of the Pelicans' problems, that really is the issue for so much of the league, because when you look at some of these scores, I was at that Knicks-Bulls game the other night in Chicago for Derrick Rose night. It was like 139-126. Nobody's playing defense. Everybody's just chucking up a bunch of threes. That is a much larger concern for the NBA, but as far as New Orleans goes, guys, it's only a matter of time. You can have all the injuries you want, the up and down nature with Zion and what happens, you know, moving forward, we'll see. But when you have a lack of defense like that, a coaching change is on the horizon.
You can know it that he's going to feel the blade of the guillotine real quick. Next up for the Pelicans is the 76ers. Charlie and I have talked about this. Man, their offseason has been sort of weird to me. Okay, they won last night, but look who they beat. They beat the Wizards, and they beat them by six. But this is a team that's 15 wins, 20 losses. I think their offseason was a disaster.
There was a lot of hype from that offseason, though, Mike. A lot of Philly fans were getting excited over bringing in Paul George. You know, they were maybe, I don't even know if excited, maybe cautiously optimistic was the right word.
Maybe that's the word.
You came on this station with us, and we talked about it, and we kind of projected it being a disaster. And I remember exactly what you said, that they were flatly not better than Boston. They weren't better than the Knicks. And, I mean, they're not better than half the teams in the East right now. So if we're being frank, they're 15-20. So this Pelicans team, yes, they're bad, but I mean, as far as disappointing, the East, yeah, it's Philadelphia. Very.
And Philly is a major disappointment in the East.
Guys, there isn't a bigger disappointment in the NBA, in a league that has plenty of disappointment these days, than the Philadelphia 76ers. There were friends of mine in the media that were saying that the Sixers had the best big three that there was, with Embiid and then Paul George and Maxey coming into his own. They're just not good. And you can only blame the injuries or the lack of being together and catching a rhythm as a group for so long. After a while, you're just not very good. And the Sixers are not very good. The moves did not work the way that they were intended. And it's really sad, because you look at Philadelphia and you thought for so long, all right, with Simmons and Embiid, it's going to happen. And then that didn't happen. And then with Harden and Embiid, it was going to happen. And Embiid was the MVP, and you thought, all right, now's the time. And Doc was in there. Nope, it's not the time either. And then you get Paul George, and Maxey's really starting to play well. Nope, that ain't going to happen. I'm to a point now with Philly, I just don't think it's going to happen with this group. And at the core of everything they've done for so long is Embiid. And he hadn't been able to stay healthy. He hadn't been able to be the guy consistently that they wanted him to be. And they're to a point now as an organization where it just feels like the clock is up for what they put in place.
Insider Calls with Nick Friedell are brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai from the comfort of your new home at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Nick, while we talked about some of the bad stuff, man, if you'd have told me that the Orlando Magic would be playing this well, man, you'd have shocked me, because that is a really good young team. And, they a little bit over 500. I get that part. But nobody could have predicted Orlando would be playing this well. And in the losses, they've been impressive. Man, they've went down to the wire with these teams.
And Paolo Banchero is coming back very soon.
And Wagner. Yep. I mean, when you get Wagner back. Guys, as a proud Orlando native who grew up in the Shaq and Penny days and was wearing Horace Grant goggles to games, I am happy to see the Magic finally coming back into some kind of national prominence here. But, Mike, to your point, when you watch the Magic, when you see them play night to night, what do, no matter what? They play hard.
Yes.
And in this era of the NBA, you're going to win a few extra games every single year just by playing hard every night. So that is a skill. That is a credit to the players, certainly Jamal Mosley, the coach who's been there for a few years now and kind of built that program up. But as far as good stories in the league, you'd be hard-pressed to find one that is better than the Magic, given the expectations. I mean, the Cavs have been awesome. Kenny Atkinson is seemingly running away with the Coach of the Year award. They're a great story. My point is, if you lose Vincaro and you lose Wagner, that team, people would expect them to just fly completely off the map because they don't have enough talent. But somehow, they're still winning games, and to exactly what you're saying, they're playing tough every night. They're giving themselves a chance no matter who's out there, and that is not something you see much of in this day and age.
I agree 1,000%, Nick. I think Jamal Mosley deserves a lot more credit for potential Coach of the Year. Like, if you look at the odds right now, Kenny Atkinson, as you mentioned, is number one, and he's the front runner, and for good reason, because Cleveland's been fantastic, and that's who I'm about to go with here. But Joe Mazzulla, Mike Budenholzer, Steve Kerr, and even Redick are above him, and it doesn't make sense to me. I think Jamal Mosley's been awesome this year. But real quick, Nick, I wanted to ask you about Cleveland. You know, I told you when we were bringing you on, at halftime of the Pelicans game, I turned over to the OKC-Cleveland matchup, and it was a heavyweight bout. Like, this is like, oh my goodness, is this a finals preview in, you know, early January? It seems like the best two teams right now in the NBA. And Cleveland, you know, Darius Garland came out, I think, a couple days ago and said that he felt like they weren't getting enough credit for what the Cavaliers were doing early on the season. And he's got a point, man. I mean, they're 32-4 right now, and they just took down an OKC team that was on a double-digit game winning streak in their home court, 19-1. In Cleveland this year. And that was an OKC team that was the top-ranked defense in the NBA. So Cleveland, well-built roster, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, all these guys that are just playing great. But they also have good depth on that roster, too, that I don't think it's appreciated enough. I think they're a fantastic team.
Yeah. But Charlie, I am with you, especially on the depth. I mean, people look at the top half of that team with Garland and Mitchell and Mobley coming into the zone, and they go, okay, you know, the young pieces are there. When you see what they've done, they're getting contributions from all over the place. So they deserve all the credit. I pause just for a second in trying to break down Cleveland only because I watched them a couple years ago in Madison Square Garden against a Knicks team that I did not think had as much talent as they did. And they completely melted down under that kind of spotlight in that kind of moment. Certainly, a few more years have gone by. They've grown together, which is a theme in our conversation today with all these younger groups. But I still don't think they are that close to Boston, especially because they haven't had the type of experience in the biggest of games. I am not going to buy Cleveland as a legit title contender until I see it with my own eyes and see them in the finals. So they have had a hell of a start to the year. It feels like there's no stopping them moving forward into the second half, and let's see if they make a move to bolster what they already have. They're really, really fun. I just don't think they are near Boston yet.
Nick, we're a little under a month away from the NBA trade deadline, and with the Pelicans at 7-31, I think that's going to be all the talk for basically the next 4 weeks, is what are the Pelicans going to do ahead of this trade deadline? You know, we talked with you about this before, Nick, but it seems like Brandon Ingram makes the most sense to move on from right now, and you may get pennies on the dollar for him at this point and at this stage where you are now, but at the same time, it's better than getting nothing and just letting him walk in free agency for nothing. So, you know, what's kind of your thoughts on Brandon Ingram's future here? I know that he's been dealing with the left ankle sprain that's kept him out for the past couple of weeks, but it feels like he's the most clear candidate for the Pelicans to move at this point.
And, Nick, to piggyback off of Charlie's comments, where do you think he may end up?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Guys, first of all, if I'm David Griffin, I close my eyes, I press the button, and I say, all right, I don't want to do this, but it's time for the rebuild one more time, because I don't see another way out of the situation that they're in. Charlie, I couldn't agree more. I don't care what you get back for Ingram. You don't want to commit yourself to him long-term for the type of money it seems like he's looking for. Just move him. Be done. Move him. This season is long since over as far as contending for, you know, a play-in spot, anything. It's done. So just make the move. And, Mike, as far as a landing spot for him, I really don't know what the best place for him will be, because Ingram now is in this weird spot where we've seen other guys be in over time as far as the trade conversations pop up. What he desperately needs is to go to any team that's going to give him the space to be at his best moving forward, looking for that next deal. Now, where that is and where he may fit, I don't know, because I always thought that the place that would give him the most space to be the best version of himself on the floor was New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it hasn't worked the way anybody thought. So where he goes after that, it's tough to see in the moment, but this is the problem. When it doesn't work in one place and you still want the max money that you feel is coming your way, it's hard to rebuild that value if you don't win. Ingram's going to have to shed that wherever he goes. And I'd be surprised, guys, as we sit here right now, wherever he may land, I don't know that he's going to get the top dollar next contract that he was expecting to have in the last couple of years here.
I think it's going to be closer to what he has now. I mean, maybe even a little bit less. Offseason buzz was that he wanted like a max, like $52 million per year.
Nobody's going to give that
for Brandon Ingram. I'm sorry, that's just what the market is for this guy. And so I think that was what scared a lot of teams off from potentially trading for him in the offseason, was that they didn't want to have to give him that type of extension, and that he was telling teams,
and I don't want to rent player for a year.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not going to give up that much for a rental. But Nick, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about the one kind of bright spot about tearing it down to the studs is that you have a couple young pieces here, and it feels like the Pelicans, their bright spot all season long has been rookie center Eve Missy. It feels like they got a slam dunk pick with the 21st overall selection in a weak draft class, and Missy from Baylor has been fantastic. He won the Western Conference Player of the Month just this past month in December. Just kind of your early thoughts on him and maybe a potential player comp. Like, what do you see when you watch Eve Missy play center for the Pels?
Charlie, he's been really, really solid. But I think a bigger takeaway, aside from a player comp right now, is if you hit in that draft, more power to anybody in the Pels front office. There have been a lot of missteps over time. But I remember being out with you guys, and it was kind of like, you know, heading into the draft, I was like, this draft. Nobody wants to make any kind of picks in this draft because the talent isn't there, especially when it's compared to the draft that's coming. I mean, Cooper Flagg and the two big prospects from Rutgers and Harper and Bailey. Oh, man, this is it. Last year, if you can find anybody, especially at 21, Charlie, to your point, I think that's a big credit to your scouting and the work that's put in. I mean, it looks like he's one of those guys that can help move forward a team that desperately needs to take a step towards something. But, guys, they are so far away, and that's what's so sad. The Pels are so far away from being back into the conversation that it's tough to even get excited about the short-term prospects, because it feels like they took such a step back, and you're looking at not only another coaching change, but we mentioned Ingram. Who knows with Zion? You know, it's always the same old story. And Charlie, I'd add one more thing. As far as the context around Ingram, there was so much hype. All right, he wants the max. He wants his next deal. And it hadn't happened. I'll give you another comparison. Jimmy Butler. Guys, all he wants is to get paid. Right. He wants that next contract that's coming. And it's very clear in the market, at least right now, the teams aren't running over themselves, not only to make the trade to get him, but then to give him the money that he wants. Maybe it ends up happening in Phoenix. Matt Ishbia, the new owner, he badly wants to just keep adding stars and paying an absolute ton for him. But when you have a player that is at a stage in his career where he wants to get paid, at least Jimmy's won a little bit in Miami. Ingram certainly hadn't done it to that level. But when the market isn't there for those players, the frustration can grow, and I think that's a big part. And a reason why, if you're a team out there for Butler or Ingram at different stages of where they're at, nobody's just sitting there going, oh, yeah, bring them in. Let's see what happens. Because there's so much more that becomes part of the nuance of a new contract and how they fit into that program structure than what would meet the eye.
Nick, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Next time you come on next week, you'll be able to talk about Franklin and playing for the national championship.
Oh, no. Right? Okay. Big game, James.
Mike, it's always great being with y'all. And if Franklin pulls it off tonight, I don't know if I can go against him again next week. But, that's why they play the games, and that's what makes this stuff fun.
All righty. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Nick Friedell. Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And it'll be our triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our triple option feature. Steven, you first.
Well, guys, I want to get into some quarterback talk. And man, oh man, are the Atlanta Falcons serious today? They had Terry Fontenot, their general manager, press conference. And talking about Kirk Cousins, he was benched late in the season. But they're not necessarily moving on from the QB. Fontenot said that the team wouldn't hesitate to bring Cousins back next year to be Michael Penix Jr.'s backup, even though Cousins...
That's BS.
Come on. An expensive backup.
I was going to say, it's a salary cap hit of $40 million. That's one expensive backup QB. That's why I was like, this can't be real. I can't understand or fathom the Falcons or fans dealing with a backup quarterback for $40 million. Call the Cajun Cannon up. I'm sure he would jump on that.
What? He sat out a year for $1 million.
Right, exactly.
good gracious. Man, I think about that. Arthur must have wrote that script for him to say that situation.
I don't think you can trade him.
Well, because of the contract, right, it'd be difficult to move. You're going to have to cut him loose. You're just going to have to cut him loose, to be honest with you. So, you know, my thing about that is, man, that's a great PR line by Terry Fontenot. That's a great one. But I don't believe one word of it.
It doesn't seem logical, that's for sure.
Guys, I'm going to go with ESPN's Rich Simini had discussed the Jets head coaching search. Mike, you and I talked a little bit about this earlier. So far, the Jets have interviewed Matt Nagy, Ron Rivera, Rex Ryan, and Mike Vrabel. They can interview this week Steve Spagnuolo. They're also going to be interviewing tonight Aaron Glenn. Next week, they can interview Joe Brady, Brian Flores, Vance Joseph, Josh McCown, Bobby Slowick, and Arthur Smith. And can interview at any time Brian Griese, Darren Rizzi, and Jeff Ulbrich, who was their interim. That is 15 names. Like, if you think that we're kind of confused about what's going to happen with the Saints head coaching job, just imagine the folks in New York. Like, all these names keep popping up every single day. There's a new interview. Like, and they're also having to figure out who their next GM is. It just seems like a mess up there. Like, we have no idea how
it's going to... It's a cluster you know what.
Exactly.
And, you know, I get called a couple times about, man, talk about, you know, the Saints search and that. And it's like, man, what? Man, that's nothing compared to what's happening here.
Agreed.
And, you know, Woody now is looking to become an ambassador, an overseas ambassador. Man, Bob and I talked about this a lot of times off the air. Man, they got a lot of bad teams in this league, and you can see top to bottom. You know, I think over here we kind of caught with the blinders. You know, we concentrate on the Saints, but you look across the board, You can see why a lot of the same teams pick in the top 10 each and every year is because the structure of those organizations aren't right at all. They aren't set up to do this. That's why I think Mark Davis, I do give him a little credit. I think he knew he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he brings in a Brady. Now, again, Brady's never pieced together a team from a personnel standpoint as a sayer. He's been the quarterback coach, but, you know, that's all been Belichick. And let's see if it works with Tom Brady, but what's happening there in firing Antonio Pierce and then Tom Telesco gets it, that to me is all Tom Brady setting this up to have a head coach and a GM that are connect the dots somewhere. He don't want to bring in a coach that's not connected to his GM some kind of way. He believes that that works, and I've heard him say that on different podcasts he's done. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number two of Sports Talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, finishing up our number two. Steve, you got Scott Shanley, great guest, coming on with you at 625, and Scott got a lot to talk about if he's talking about the state of the Saints right now and the moves that will be made and could be made in the offseason.
You know, and I definitely wanted to get a lot of his thoughts on the head coaching search. You know, Chrissy Freud interviewed Drew Brees the other day. You talked to her, and she's saying that Brees would recommend Aaron Glenn for the position. I'm just curious what Scott Shanley thinks. I know he's been around the block, too. Get some of his insights on the position, the coaching needs for this team, and also a little bit about breaking down the roster and some NFL playoff talk with him. And then the 7 o'clock hour, some baseball, college baseball, a little bit of an SEC and LSU preview, which Mark Etheridge of D1Baseball.com. Just around the corner next month, we'll be getting into the hardball.
Yeah, I was finishing. I went to get something at the station. I filled up my tank. And the first question, one of the guys walked up to me, "Man, when y'all going to start doing LSU baseball? Man, we got to have a winner somewhere along
the
line."
And I'm ready.
I said, it's right around the corner. And boy, Jay Johnson, I think, got something here. He really does.
Save us, Jay.
And I told him, listen, I tell this to Coach Johnson every time I see him. Hey, keep rolling this late into the summer. Gives us something to talk about. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.